Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's
the buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, guys? Sam Franco, Chris Brame, back with another episode of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. We're going to go heavy NFL today as training camps are getting ready to fire up. And we're also going to talk at the back end about the Hawks signing one of my childhood heroes. Maybe 15 years too late, but still will be interesting to see this individual in a Hawks uniform. But first and foremost, training camp starting up. You fired up, Brame?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can get, you know, we're going to hit that month of August where you see the light at the end of the tunnel, but it doesn't feel like it's getting any closer from the long off season. I mean, these preseason games can be a grind, but yeah, I mean, at least now it's like the smell is in the air. The smell of pigskin is there. And, you know, there's been a resolution, too, in the Falcons versus Julio Jones. So he'll be in camp, and, you know, the Falcons could just be focused on trying to get back to the Super Bowl, which this team has a good shot at doing.
That's right. When the Falcons hit, I guess, MetLife Stadium on August 10th for their first preseason game against the Jets, they will indeed have Julio Jones in tow, who has agreed to some sort of amendment to his contract. According to some reports out there, I believe Jeff Schultz, who's now with The Athletic, was the first to put this out there. And it's basically a $2 million addendum, if you will, where they're taking money from 2019 for his salary and putting it on the 2018 contract in the form of some bonus. And it doesn't affect anything. His cap number still remains the same. And look, that was what was going to happen in this case. The Falcons weren't going to let this become a distraction because one thing we know, Arthur Blank as an owner is very much obsessed with the optics of his franchises in both Atlanta United and the Falcons. So it's one of those cases where this is a bad look for him. It's a bad look for the team if Julio Jones holds out. So they wanted to get it done quickly. Julio now, I believe, after the signing bonus and after his base salary, is somewhere at like $14.9 or so million dollars for this season in terms of his earnings. Cap number still stays at $12.9. But the point of all that is that $14.9 vaults him back up into the upper echelon of earnings per season for wide receivers.
Yeah, I mean, for this upcoming season, it puts him inside the top 10 where he was at 12th, which is where he was also last year. What makes no sense to me now is, all along, this is all Julio said that he was wanting. He was wanting an update to his contract. He wasn't wanting a contract extension. So now it just, you're like, well, why did the Falcons even let it get to the point where they were even, we're not negotiating with you? And it really did seem to get so, you know, it kind of got nasty between the two sides. I mean, that's how it felt. And you know, and in the end, they did what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done twice for Antonio Brown. They took a couple million dollars and basically fronted him like $4 million in two separate seasons.
The Seahawks did this for Marshawn Lynch a few years ago. I believe the Patriots have done it with Rob Gronkowski. There are creative ways that you can get this kind of thing done.
Yeah, the Patriots were different in that they basically gave Gronkowski, it was like these easily attainable incentives
yeah,
that he would reach. But yeah, with Antonio Brown, the Steelers have twice taken like a couple million dollars from 1 year, moved it up to the year before that, so... And all along, that's what it sounded like. That's what Julio wanted. He wanted some more cash for this upcoming season where this guy who's like, listen, I'm like at worst, what, the second best receiver in the NFL?
I would say at worst.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Antonio Brown is ahead of him. So I'm just glad that some Falcons fans can now, they're going to go from, he only caught three touchdown passes last year to like, oh yeah, he's the best receiver in the NFL again.
Yeah, now a certain Atlanta television personality can tell his son that he can make Julio Jones his screensaver on his phone once again. And the Falcons, by the way, expert trolling level. As soon as this was announced, they tweeted out that some new wallpapers and screensavers for your phone or desktop computer that you can have. So again, shout out to Buck Lanford over there in Atlanta for the sob story on Twitter of Julio Jones making his kid upset. It's like,
what a goober, too. This is like a grown man using his 10-year-old son as a pawn to
right.
try and convince this, guy who is, risks injury every snap of the football to like, oh, yeah, just give in and cave in and just show up for my 10-year-old.
The best part about all of that was the Twitter reaction. I don't know if you've been paying attention to some of the stuff that, tweets directed at him or kind of some subtweets or shade, and the Falcons ultimately cap it off there with the desktop and phone backgrounds that
right.
you can put on your phone.
Well, the ultimate is, and I'm sure he got a lot of these, which is just the simple, delete this tweet.
Or delete your account.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, that's just such a get-off-my-lawn kind of older perspective take to have, because I totally agree with you. Julio Jones is out there in the line of fire every week. Guys are trying to take his head off. And all he wanted was to be paid his value. And that's the thing. These contracts, that's why, year in and year out, contracts are always so weird, because the next year somebody's always going to vault over. There's always going to be a new contract or a new thing. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo was the highest paid player in the NFL for all of about a month. And then somebody else got
a
contract.
And then you knew okay, now Matt Ryan are going to get updated contracts. And next up is Aaron Rodgers, who's going to end up he needs to make more money than Matt Ryan. But, it's just the idea of you're using your 10-year-old as a prop here. When I was 10 years old, I was at the thing I loved was the Miami Dolphins. But I can tell you this, I didn't know anything about their contracts. I didn't know anything. And I know, things have definitely changed when it comes to free agency in the NFL. So I don't even, free agency probably, I don't even think it existed back when I was 10 years old. But, I didn't know anything about that other than those guys, I liked them. I wanted to see them play. And I'm sure this guy's 10-year-old son is really deeply involved in oh my gosh, Julio's not going to be there because he's a greedy athlete.
Well, and the crazy thing too is for the shut up and play guy, I want to directly address that person, because it's okay, have you ever called your cable company, been mad at how much they were charging you, and eventually they agreed to charge you less because they didn't want to lose you as a customer? If you've done that, you know what you just did? You just Julio Jones'd.
Yeah.
So, look, in walks of everyday life, people do this all the time. And if you feel like you're not getting paid what you're worth, you're probably going to say something about it.
Right.
So, bottom line and all that is, I think Julio was, he did sign a contract, yes, and that's one of the takes you hear a lot is, he signed a contract, he should play. It's look, sometimes you overperform your contract. And it's finally done here to where both sides have agreed to fix this. And now you can just move on to football, because that's what Julio Jones wants to do. He's never been a guy to upset the situation. He's never been a guy you hear about off the field. He's concerned about football, his Kia dealership in Tuscaloosa, which is aptly named Julio Jones Kia, and the mixed-use development that he's invested in over near the Mall of Georgia. He's not a guy that really you hear a whole lot about. And that's a good thing.
No, he's not that. He's not a diva wide receiver at a position where it seems 99% of the divas in professional football play that one position. This is the first time there's really been any sort of friction or tension when it comes to him there. But it just, I don't know where it got to the point where it was Julio just signed this contract and you can't give him an extension now and you can't afford it. From what I got, that's their position was always, we want an update, we want it modified, and it all boiled down to his salary this season, what he was due to make, would have had him paid as the 12th highest paid receiver in the NFL.
Which is nonsense.
No, he should at least be making more than Paul Richardson.
Yes.
And I don't know if he even is
and
that
Sammy
now.
Watkins is making more. It's okay.
Right, and you look at the deal the Rams just gave Brandon Cooks, and so again, it just brings me back to, I don't even know why it got to this point. If in the end, he got what he wanted and then Atlanta got it done before training camp started. But why did it even get to the point where, last week it's we're not negotiating with you.
Thomas Dimitroff, they came out with that statement, and Arthur Blank, I think this was yesterday, was reached on the phone. He was I think the quote was, "I trust my people to get this job done." I have a feeling that behind the scenes, though, Arthur may have came down from on high and been like, this needs to stop. You need to fix this.
He might have finally done that, because I know that he has not been involved, and he really isn't that involved with the day-to-day operations anymore of the team.
He gets involved when he has to.
And maybe he did in this case, but you know, I know there was definitely serious friction and tension between Dimitroff and Julio Jones, to the point where, I mean, Julio might not even speak to or look at the GM. I don't know if that's going to go away now or anything, or how this ended up getting resolved, but it's just weird that it seems like it ended up getting resolved the way to what Julio wanted in the first place. And all along, have just based on the precedent of the Steelers and Antonio Brown, it's like, this is what I thought. This is what I thought the Falcons and the resolution would be all along, is they just move a little money forward to this year. And that's what they did.
And I think one thing about it, too, is the Falcons talked about, you know, not wanting to set a precedent, you know, that you can do this with other players. Julio Jones rises above precedent, okay? If some other player comes up, well, you did it for Julio Jones, all you have to say is, well, you're not Julio Jones.
Yeah, you're not one of the best players in the league at your position. And that's what Julio is. I mean, right. I think I Antonio Brown I'd put ahead of him, and I think that's
I don't even know if I'd put him ahead. It might be side by side. I think it just really depends on how you value the receiver position. And look, Julio Jones only had 3 touchdowns last year, and people were like, why does he want more money? He only had 3 touchdowns. It's like, dude, there is way more to it than that. Red zone targets. How many people are covering him in that part of the field? The plays you're calling. I mean, there's so many different things you have to look at. You can't just look at that number. That's why I think in today's sabermetrics society, we get way too obsessed upon numbers without looking at what's behind the numbers or the qualitative data versus the quantitative data.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of touchdown catches, I put as much on Sarkisian as anybody.
100%.
And also, you know, and also, look, I mean, this season you figure, like, is he going to catch 3 or fewer touchdowns again this year? No. I mean, you've got to assume there's going to be some positive regression on his part one way or another. So, but the thing with Julio is you look at the 1,400-yard seasons, you look at his air yards when Atlanta's throwing the ball to him, the average is 14 yards downfield. He accounts for 46% of Atlanta's air yards in the passing game, so that's the guy that they're throwing the ball downfield to. And then, you know, Gabriel's gone, but he was more of like, we're going to hit you short, and then you'll take off anything that stretched the field with him. But Sanu, you're operating more around the line of scrimmage, but Jones is getting past the sticks when they're throwing it to him.
Absolutely, and I think this was one thing, too, that the team really needed to go ahead and get done early, because the Super Bowl's in Atlanta this season, and the Falcons have about as good of a chance as any team ever has of being the first team to play in the Super Bowl in their home stadium. I know the Vikings were within one game of it last season, but this is a team that, you know, I think I saw USA Today, somebody from there picked the Falcons to win the Super Bowl, or at least be in the Super Bowl this season. And that's something that I'm sure Arthur Blank really, really would like to have in his back pocket, his big, shiny new stadium where the roof is actually working, 100% efficiency now. He wants his team to play in that Super Bowl, and who doesn't want that? You know, if you're a Falcons fan, you'd love for that to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, this team's been to the playoffs 2 years in a row. Last year, they were the only team in the NFC to return to the playoffs after that, you know, heartbreaking loss in the Super Bowl the year before.
And if Julio Jones hadn't been held down by the Philly DB on that final play in Philadelphia, you know, with both hands on him, holding him down, he may have been able to catch that pass.
Yeah.
Who knows?
See, I like that'll be like for the that'll be the changing of the narrative now for that from last week with the he dropped that pass against the Eagles to now it'll be like, oh well, he was held on that play.
Well, I've always said he was held.
I'm not including
but
you.
No,
in
you're
the one
totally
that was,
right.
No, but yeah. That was like, you know, kept seeing that last week.
He dropped that pass.
He dropped that pass, and I'm like, well, I mean, I guess he could have caught it, but it wasn't like it was just a perfect pass that he dropped.
Over his head.
It was a stupid play where the fullback Coleman was the only one lined up on the left side, which means the Eagles knew, guess which side of the field this play is not going to be run to. And then you had Sanu and Julio Jones within like 2 yards of each other in the end zone. It was a horrible play. But last week it was he dropped that pass and only caught 3 touchdowns. But now we rejoice that Julio is back to being, oh, we've got the best receiver in the NFL now.
I'll tell you this, too. The keyboard warriors were on fire this past week in terms of the takes for Julio Jones, led foremost by someone using their 10-year-old son to try to guilt a multimillionaire into coming back to playing football.
I've said it last week. The one of the greatest schemes NFL owners have been able to pull and get away with is just convincing so many people that the players are they're paid enough or they're paid too much. And
they're so greedy.
Yeah, exactly. And people buy into that when it comes to, when they go on strike. Who's everyone mad at? The players.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Jerry Jones is speaking out of both sides of his mouth, you know, taking a knee with his players before the game last season, and now he's saying that all of our players will stand with their toe on the line for the national anthem. It's like, oh my God, can we stop talking about this, please?
The owners appear to be the only ones even still just keeping that issue alive.
Well, they're obsessed with it.
And it is, and it's dumb too, because no matter what they decide to do, like the Trump will, he hates the NFL. They're not going to be able to appease
the guy. Well,
he
loves the NFL in the sense that they're giving him something to look like the good guy with.
Well, but no, but even then, he's just never going to be satisfied with whatever they do.
Because they froze him out.
Because, yeah, and he's an internet troll.
Pretty much.
The president is an internet troll.
Pretty much. I mean, that's 100% accurate. And this guy, I mean, he likes to let people know his opinions about them via Twitter, which some people find to be very interesting. We'll just say that. But look, with the owners is funny too, because of the national anthem thing. And before we actually jump into kind of what we expect from the Falcons this season, I do have one more thing to talk about here in the NFC South, and it's the Jerry Richardson statue. You know, Carolina Panthers owner David Tepper, the new owner, had a press conference a few weeks ago, you know, and they're like, hey, what are you going to do with that big statue out there of this former owner who's being accused of, you know, sexual impropriety towards employees? And the baseline answer, which sounded like it came from a robot, oh, we're contractually obligated to keep the statue. It's like, are you kidding me? Like, NFL, stop kicking yourself in the butt. Like, when you were negotiating the sale, why the hell was that a sticking point? Like, Jerry Richardson wasn't going to turn down, what did it end up, was it $2.5 billion, or was it more than that?
He had to sell the team in disgrace, but he did get to sell the team.
Right.
Yeah.
He got billions of dollars.
Yes.
And you're saying that a sticking point of that was that he gets to keep his goofy-looking statue where he's holding out a football and there's two Panthers at his feet that look, you know, basically like his concubines or whatever? I mean, it's the dumbest-looking statue I've ever seen, and you couldn't knock it down just because of that?
Well, you know, it's kind of like, I think about that the University of Louisville had Papa John's Stadium.
Yeah.
And as it turns out, that naming rights deal was not with like Papa John's.
No, it was with a guy.
Corporate. It was with John Schnatter.
Yeah,
it was with him individually. And somehow they figured out a way out of that deal.
Yeah.
Because the name is not going to be called Papa John's Stadium anymore. But that was basically a situation where he has the naming rights to the stadium and could have called it whatever he wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what all I know is that it ain't going to be called Papa John's Stadium anymore. So the fact that, I don't know, the University of Louisville figured out a way out of that deal, that it would seem to me that, you know, the Carolina Panthers could probably find some way to get rid of that Jerry Richardson statue if they wanted to.
By the way, does the slime of Louisville know no bounds? I mean, you've had Rick Pitino, Bobby Petrino, and now Papa John, for God's sakes.
Yeah. And then that AD, Dave,
like their pizza.
Dave Jurek. Or Yurik, however you say his name. I mean, the sweet deal he got where he lost his job, but now I've got season tickets for life, parking spaces. I mean, the guy's got the hookup now at Louisville.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was just as like deeply involved in all that nonsense as any of the coaches were.
Just nuts. But anyway, not to have strayed too far away from the topic du jour, now that Julio Jones is in camp for the Falcons, they're reporting. We're recording this on Thursday, so they're all reporting today. Practices will begin on Friday. But the main thing about this team, I think, when you look at the prognosis for the season, the defense looks like it's going to be pretty good. I mean, you're putting Vic Beasley back at his normal position. You're not making him a stand-up linebacker. You're putting him back as a hand-down pass rusher, which I still don't know why they did that in the first place. But you've got, now that Julio's taken care of here, you really need to focus on locking up Grady Jarrett and Jake Matthews in the long term, because you've got to build through the lines of scrimmage. Grady Jarrett has become one of the better defensive tackles in the league, and Jake Matthews isn't the best left tackle in the NFL, but he's certainly a starter, and he's certainly one that you want to lock down. But when those things happen, just in terms of the prognosis for the season, there's really one guy I'm looking at, Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big, you know, kind of the question for the Falcons heading into a training camp is, you know, how much improvement can Atlanta's offense make in the second year with Sark? And he's gonna fail though if everyone's expectation is that Atlanta's offense is gonna do the same thing in his second year as it did with Kyle Shanahan's
second
year.
That was an anomaly, man. Yeah. That will never happen again.
Right. So you know that's gonna be. I mean, that's a hard bar now for Sarkisian because I mean there might be people that do think like, oh well, automatically we got that second year bump with Shanahan, we'll get one with Sark, and that's. You know, that might not necessarily be the case. I mean, ultimately, Atlanta needs to get better in the red zone. I think that was the biggest reason why the Falcons, their points per game was 11 points less last year than it was the year before.
Absolutely, and they've got to get better there. I think they've got to get better in a sense of, involving, other people in the offense. I know Julio only had 3 touchdowns, but you've also got to get, your other guys involved. That red zone efficiency was horrible, and it wasn't just Julio Jones, it was really everybody. So I think just in terms of the offense, there needs to be a little bit more fluidity, more flow. It just seemed a lot more choppy last season than it had under Kyle Shanahan.
Right. Well, the red zone offense, but it gets back to how much better does he get as a play caller, because that's why the season ended, because Atlanta had 4 downs in the red zone in Philadelphia and couldn't score a touchdown. And, you just think back to that very last play that Atlanta called on 4th down.
The team that won the Super Bowl, by the way.
Yeah, and the fullback is lined up by himself on the left side. So automatically the defense knows, okay, the play is not going here. They're not going to throw the ball to their fullback in this situation.
Right.
And then you ended up with Jones and Sanu within like 2 yards of it. And Matt Ryan rolling out too. It was a terrible play call. I mean, that's where you get to the crux of, I think the red zone issues that Atlanta had is Sarkisian was not a great play caller last year, and how much better is he now?
And I think Steve Sarkisian knows all of this because I think this year is a vital year for his, the future of his career. Because if the Falcons struggle, don't have a good, season this year, we've already seen, his fall from grace. But with all of the weapons this team has, if the Falcons don't do well, a lot of people are going to be pointing that finger at him, and I strongly doubt that if the Falcons miss the playoffs, that he'll be back as the offensive coordinator.
No, yeah, if the offense isn't improved, then Atlanta will not be able to keep him for a third year.
No,
I mean he was probably on the fence this year, but in the end, like you're just gonna cut bait after one season with the guy,
right?
Because there were some things, and I brought up last year during the year when you look at Atlanta's yards per play, third down conversions, there were a lot of things about last year's offense that looked and were similar to the year before. But Atlanta had the fewest possessions in the league last mm-hmm. year, ran the fewest plays in the league last year, so there was. They turned it over more than they did the year before, and the defense really was good at, I guess, bend but not break, but it's not like it got off the field forcing a lot of 3 and outs, and Atlanta didn't have a lot of takeaways last year either, so it did limit possessions for Atlanta's offense last season, which is going to reduce your points per game too. So if the Falcons could just have the ball more, that'll help Sarkisian and improve his numbers offensively too.
Absolutely. Some other NFL news and notes to get to here. Julio not holding out, but 2 guys that are probably the 2 best defensive players in the NFL, Aaron Donald for the Rams and Oakland's Khalil Mack. And those are huge holdouts, obviously. Both of those guys want upwards of $20 million per season, which is, in the past, unheard of for defensive players. But Aaron Donald is such a unique case, as is Khalil Mack, because Khalil Mack's the only player, I think, in NFL history to make an all-pro team in 2 different positions. Which is unreal. I mean, the guy as a linebacker and as a defensive lineman made all-pro, which is nuts. And Aaron Donald provides you such an interesting thing because what do quarterbacks hate more than anything? They, at times, can handle pressure from the outside. It's when it's coming right up the gut in the pocket. That's what they hate. And Aaron Donald is one of the best defensive linemen we've ever seen at getting pressure up the middle. So the Rams, who have signed all these guys to 1-year deals, you've got Aqib Talib, you've got Marcus Peters, there are some holes at linebacker because Alec Ogletree isn't there anymore, but you signed all of these pieces to sort of complement what you have, and they want to make a run at it this year, which is totally understandable because they've got a lot of talent, and they just re-upped Todd Gurley to a massive deal with a lot of guaranteed money, the most ever for a running back. But if Aaron Donald isn't in the equation, then it's a whole different ballgame for that team.
Yeah, and Donald, you know, I mean, I guess in a similar vein to Julio, is Donald still working on his rookie contract? So when you look at defensive tackle salaries in the NFL, I don't even think Donald is in the top 20, you know, for this upcoming season. So, you know what Donald's frame of mind is. I feel like I'm the best player at this position in the league, and I'm gonna, you know, and you're still working on my rookie salary. I don't know how the Rams, I mean, there's the, you know, salary cap, but the Rams are just throwing money at Brandon Cooks. I mean, Gurley just got his big deal. So, you know, I don't know what their situation is, but they'd, you know, I know they've got Ndamukong Suh there. Maybe they feel that gives them a little bit of leverage when it comes to negotiating with Aaron Donald, as they've got, you know, another, I don't even think he's a premier guy though at that position anymore. The Dolphins will tell you that.
Right, but it's still an interesting piece to put right next to Aaron Donald. I mean, if he's not the number one, but he's like the number two, that certainly helps.
I mean, that's definitely a ferocious front line right there on defense. But I don't know. I mean, Donald held out of training camp last year, so maybe he'll end up showing up at some point again.
Yeah, exactly. And Khalil Mack's also an interesting case, as we mentioned, just because of how good of a player he is. And this seems like something, you know, John Gruden, the new head coach of the Raiders, super old school. This seems like something that would definitely rub him the wrong way.
Yeah, but, you know, in the end, Mack is in that, I guess, is he still working on his rookie deal too at this point?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, these guys are just, they've already realized that they are amongst the best players at their positions in the NFL.
They're worth way more than they're getting paid.
And they're overperforming what their current salary is. And, yeah, I mean, they're ready for that guarantee to make more dough.
All right, last but not least here on this edition of the Crossover Podcast on 960theref.com, the Atlanta Hawks boasted a player in the 80s, early 90s, known as the human highlight film, Dominique Wilkins. He, in my opinion, is the second best dunker in NBA history, behind one man, the oldest player in the NBA, who now will play for the Atlanta Hawks, Vince Carter.
Yeah, and when I first saw the Hawks announce that signing, I thought, well, did they get him to come out of retirement or something? Turns out, no, Carter was actually still in the NBA last year
Sacramento.
Playing for the Kings.
Because mm-hmm.
I thought about, you know, the Pacers had signed Damian Wilkins last year,
right.
And I think they ended up getting rid of him in January or February, but it was like here was this young team and this veteran presence that could be on the bench with him, and I guess that's what Travis Schlenk has said about Vince Carter is, you know, they've got this young unit, and they're in this rebuilding mode, and he likes the idea of having this, you know, this veteran presence in there to maybe show him around.
I love this as a signing for a number of different reasons. One, Vince Carter is probably one of my top five favorite basketball players of all time. I mean, I remember watching him at UNC. You know, he came into the Stegman Coliseum with UNC when it was supposed to be Dean Smith versus Tubby Smith, and it ended up being Ron Jersa versus the coach of North Carolina, Bill Guthrie.
Yeah.
Thank you. So it's like the coaching matchup wasn't as great there. But I think, what was it, North Carolina got a win in overtime here in Stegman Coliseum. So, you know, Vince Carter's been here. And Vince Carter, again, has had a stellar career. Dunked over a dude in Sydney in 2000 for the French national team. You know, he's been a very good player. Doesn't have any NBA titles, but he's an eight-time All-Star, slam dunk champion. And just a guy who's always been a very, very solid basketball player.
Yeah, which, you know, what amuses me about this is like the type of player that the Hawks could never get when in their prime.
Of course.
But now it's like, you know, now that their careers are over, oh, yeah, Atlanta could totally get a name like Vince Carter. You know, kind of like, you know, I know they briefly had Carmelo Anthony.
Well, no, they still have him. So right now, technically, those two guys are on the same team.
Oh, they haven't gotten rid of him yet?
It's going to
Right,
happen.
It is going to. But it's like, okay, yeah, now they can get Carmelo Anthony. But when, you know, Melo was with the Nuggets and was actually still maybe considered a superstar, like he never would have even given him a Hawks the time of day.
Absolutely. But you know, Vince Carter being on the Hawks, you know, this is a guy that wants to be a head coach one day. He wants to be a coach, and I think this provides him a very interesting opportunity to mentor and coach on the floor a lot of these young Hawks players. And it's crazy because Trae Young wasn't even born when Vince Carter was drafted into the NBA. Think about that, just in terms of the gap there. But Vince Carter will come in, and he's going to accept the role of being that mentor for a lot of these young players. You know, John Collins, Torian Prince, Kent Bazemore even, who's still on the team. And, you know, this is a guy in Vince Carter who has a wealth of experience, wealth of NBA knowledge, and again, Travis Schlenk wanting him to be around the team and be a good locker room presence, this team's going to, for better or worse terminology, suck next year. They're going
to
be horrible.
Hopefully they need to.
But that's the thing. You have a player like this that can at least help bring along your young players. And the fact that he's accepted this role and wants to be in this role is amazing. So one of the better NBA players of the post-Jordan generation or post-Jordan era coming to the Hawks. And, you know, I may not buy a jersey, but I may get the T-shirt jersey, a little Scherzy action.
Right. Well, they should probably do that as a giveaway to some gang, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I don't know how many minutes he played last year. He averaged like 5 points or something, but, I mean, I guess he's not here to play minutes anyway. He's just here to mentor those young guys.
Here to mentor and maybe throw a dunk down here or there.
You think he can he still?
Oh, he can still get up. There were some highlights last season from Sacramento where he got into the lane. Not the same ups he used to.
He's not going
to
jump over anyway.
Probably isn't doing the honey dip dunk anymore where he put his whole arm down in the rim.
Right.
But, you know, he can still get up if he needs to.
Okay.
Old man got ups.
All right. Well, so, I'll be good to see from time to time.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'll tune in every once in a while. I may go to a game just so I can see Vince Carter play. But, yeah, if you're a Hawks fan like me, it's going to be a long season and a long couple of seasons, as it seems like, as the rebuild is in full swing. All right, he's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for joining us. Next time on the podcast, we'll talk Braves post-trade deadline because the trade deadline will have just happened. What kind of moves are they going to make? And we'll hit on some other stuff. You know, obviously it depends on the kind of news and stories that break. We might get another great tweet, scapegoating a 10-year-old to try and make the big NFL player feel bad.
Right, maybe some TV broadcaster in Oakland will have to do that, or
that's right,
in L.A.
They'll do that for Khalil Mack or Aaron Donald. But again, for Chris Brame, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the Crossover Podcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Rate and review 5 stars, please. Definitely helps us out. Back next week with another episode of the Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.